Hello there, Rishi Fogarty with you for the next hour, and my guest this evening occupies a rare place in the esteem, admiration and affection of North Kerry people for very many reasons. His genial personality, his racy of the soil competence as a master of ceremonies and festive occasions, his sensitivity as a poet and a ballad maker all mark and indeed hallmark him as a true son of his environment and one in complete harmony with the rural background from which he sprang. He is a man I have greatly admired for many years. And this evening, we will delve into yet another of his lifelong passions, that of Kerry football, Kerry footballers, and, indeed, the secret of Kerry. Dan Keane, you're very welcome to the programme. And what is the secret of Kerry, Dan?
Well, the secret of Kerry is that there is a natural propensity to love your native place. There is a natural propensity for a person to love their own children. And that propensity is instilled by God. Therefore, it is a divine facility, which I suppose we can never really solve. But we do all love our native place and we all love our own people. God made many sacraments and he made many forms of love just the same. I remember I was in my van and there was a tournament played. I was chairman of my van carnival. Bally Longford won the tournament. And when I was presenting the prizes, I said that I could very easily be down in Bally Longford shouting the support to the Bally team. But circumstances brought me to my van. My great-grandfather was evicted out of a farm in Ashtee, and he came to live in my van. But in researching, I think he was a my van man who went to marry in Ashtee. He married an Ashtee woman by the name of Annie Dalton. And that's how they're coming back. But I love every bit about Kerry apart from that. It is a lovely, picturesque county. And I love it there. And if you heard of Sigerson Clifford, Sigerson Clifford wrote beautiful pieces. He had a beautiful way for managing them. And the old piece there, the opening piece you had there now was by Brian McMahon, I know that. And there is another part that I totally stole, Eamon Keane. And there was nothing in my life I ever heard that I appreciated and loved as much as Eamon Keane reciting the poems of Sigerson Clifford. I thought they were most beautiful. As a matter of fact, they impressed me so much that I wrote a poem, a tribute to Sigerson Clifford. And if you have time, I'll read that for you. Now I won't have it all off by heart. He wrote me a book of ballads, a bogman's ballads, he said. I read and I loved and listened, and I listened and loved and read. For he wrote with a passionate fervour of beauty, love and fire, that stirred in my heart a feeling of restless and wild desire. I followed his soul a vision with a wonder that never waned. I drank from the wine of his dreaming where rugged splendour reigned. I roamed by the rolling river from the fountains of feeling that flowed, and I waved to the wandering wagons the folk of the open road. He wrote a lot about the tinkers. A lot of them nowadays don't like to be called tinkers, but it was no reflection because they came there as tinkerer, tinsmith, but of course the plastic killed their trade. But the last first thing, I shared in his loves and longings, his yearnings as years assailed, for the magical myth of the morning when the pulses of peace prevailed. Born in my breast is their beauty, till the drums of heaven shall roll, and away to the great eternal summon a bogman's soul.
That's beautiful, Dan. Well done. Well done. Lovely stuff. Come here. What's this thing about Kerry and football? What's the big interlink? It's like something that every young Kerry person is born into.
Well, they seem to be born into it. And I don't know where. There is still an awful great instinct for football in Kerry. And I remember the young fellow that you mentioned. I was in the stall inside in the square. And it was the year that Down won the All-Ireland, the first All-Ireland that beat Kerry. And there was two young lads being those in the square, and they have marks down as goals. And one of them said, I'll be Kerry and you'll be Down. And they said, no, he said, I won't be Down. I'll be Kerry and you'll be Down. So that even that Kerry were after going Down, they still wanted to be Kerry. And that great strength is there. And I suppose Kerry produced an amount of great footballers. And if you have an admiration for anything, even if you take a man who is a cripple, he can have admiration for a man of agility and physical ability. Take Dan Welsh in my van now. Dan walked always with a crutch. I believe he had an accident in his youth and that they left him that result. But he was a great man to speak of football. And there'd be any man played football and he'd be judge. But Dan was a fantastic judge of football. And of course he never played it. But it was a wonderful thing and it came. And it was like my cousin Phil O'Donnell was married to Joe Shanahan. And when I'd call, she used to often say to us, what would he talk about if there wasn't football? Would he have anything to talk about? But we'd always talk about football. And there were a lot of things you could say. Joe had an Uncle Jack, and I believe he was a powerful footballer. But he was one of the unique people that never wanted to play. And I can't know why.
Dan, you have a great passion yourself for Kerry football, Kerry footballers, and all things connected with football.
Yeah.
When was your first thought about Kerry football? When was your introduction to the passion of Kerry football?
Well, my introduction came around my own fireside at home, but I remember going back. In the early 20s, we used to have ramblers, and of course, they were always discussing football and different things. But I remember to hear the term used that someone said, there's a great young lad coming up in my van. I must be very young when I heard that. And of course, maybe I was older, that it might be said more than once. But that was Con Brushnin. And I had great talks of matches against Drumrooth. And it was Dan Welsh now that I mentioned a while ago. He told me he was a match in Cornelius Field in Achanur. That wouldn't be a proper sports field, only the goals were down for the day. Maybe a few triples or issues cut with his side. But he said he saw John B. Keane's uncle coming off the field crying because my van beat Drumrooth. And there was a great man playing with Drumrooth I mentioned as well. His name was Wolfe. And he'd been uncle to Gus Clemens. And you know, well, Gus Clemens played after with Kerry. So that all the time came down. But I remember the first All-Ireland that I can recall. It would be 1926. Now, I'm trying to think, was it 24 or 26 or 29? But it wouldn't be 24, because how I remember it, my father always kept a couple of cows. We'd only a small piece of land. But on a Sunday, they were making a rick of hay, and that was the day the All-Ireland was on. The 24 All-Ireland was replay played in April, I think it was. And you would be making a rick of hay in April. The 29 All-Ireland, my mother was dying. And my father wouldn't be interested. But I remember well that day, James Lee, he was coming up the road with a horse and sidecar. Sidecar now would be the two wings you could fold up and in. The same as the Jarvis now in Killarney. But they sent me out to ask James who won the match. And he told me Kerry won it. But I don't remember if he gave me the score. But I know that he told me Kerry won it. And when I went in, the talk was all about Brushnin and Thomas Mahoney. So it had to be 27.
Dan, you said,
26,
you said something very interesting there. You were associating the All-Ireland with the wines of Hay and with your mother's,
oh, yeah,
with your father's death or your mother's death?
My mother's death.
Your mother's death. Now, what I want to put you is this. Now, you're going back so far associating. What I've noticed myself, Kerry people and their lives are built and associated around the All-Ireland finals. People can say, I was such a place because the final was on, and that's the year that happened. So it's an intrinsic communication between football and people, isn't it?
Yeah, there is an intrinsic communication and things, and people always have a habit of connecting one thing with the next. Mm. I had an aunt over the road, and there was a man living next door to her. And if they were falling out and arguing, it would be bad. But he had most awful faith in her. He thought she knew everything. And she had a shop. But this night they were discussing what was this such a man's age. And he said, she said, wait a while now. He said, wouldn't you ask Mag? And Mag came down, and when they came down, they asked her. And she said, wait till I think now. What year, we'll call him James Smith, or Jim Smith.
Yeah.
What year was Jim Smith born? Jim Smith was born the year that Henny Flaherty worked below at Moores. Henny Flaherty worked at Moores the year that her Uncle Jack married. Her Uncle Jack married the year Father Sheehan came to my van. Father Sheehan came to my van the year that Jack Stack died. Yeah. And Jack Stack died the day my sister Minnie went to America.
Yeah.
And that's the date of his birth.
Yes, yes.
So she connected them all three in the Kale here and there and everywhere.
And the football is the same. People connect the passages of their life through football.
The football is the same, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, listen, Dan, what's your first choice of music, by the way?
My first choice of music, well, anything refined, but I'll tell you now, apart from my choice of music, there's a song I wrote myself, The Famine Years, and Peggy Sweeney sang that for me in the All Ireland in Qualtis, and it got first place,
yeah.
But we put it to the air of Skibbereen. But since then, Peggy got some relation of us to put music to it, and I'd like to hear that, to hear it to the music she got it.
Well, then, sit back and enjoy this.
I will be there.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Dan Cain is my very special guest tonight. Delighted to have him. Dan, I suppose, after 26, your memories of Kerry football, after that, bring us up along. What are your other earliest memories of Kerry?
Well, after 26 and maybe around the 26 period, we mentioned that there was great love for Kerry football. But there was another thing in Kerry. There was the love that led to marriage. And I remember when I was young, of the man coming up the right horse. We lived in a Bohareen. And he asked me, what's my name? And I said, Jack Tech. And he gave me 2 shillings. And my mother said, he must think it was a penny he was giving you. I'll give him that back when he's gone down. But first she didn't get it back because I went in head with it. But anyhow at all, Jack, they were called the Tech Sullivans.
Yeah.
And I was told one time that I got the name Tex. All people had nicknames to know us under. And that there was a Techyberry and their ancestors. But I discovered since that it wasn't, that there was a friendship between the old tech man and a Mr. Techyberry who was in the stall. And that's how it was. But Bill Tech, he played fullback for the Kerry Juniors. He also played fullback for my van. And he used to visit our house often. And the reason he was coming to our house was, there was a girl there by the name of Welsh. And she'd be first cousin to Kit Larkin of Carraweerock. And Jack Tech married Kit Larkin. And Bill Tech married the girl of the Welshes, but I'm not certain to know for first name. I'd be only guessing it. And that's why I got to know the Tech Sullivans. But I remember that I used to hear him talking a lot of brushing, and I took no notice of Bill Tech, like he was an ordinary man to me. But then, in the start, I was thinking about Con Brushing. And of course, going to school, you'd be reading about Finn McCool and the deeds they did and everything. And I had Con Brushing in that bracket. And I thought it was a wonderful thing to have Con Brushing in that. But my father took me to Listowel one day to a match. And I said after my writing, we weren't long going because there was no speed limits at the time. And we had a good lively donkey, which they said was a Spanish donkey.
Mm-hmm.
But if he was Spanish, I said he was very much at home in our green field. He seemed to be happy there. But when we arrived in the stall, there was a man standing outside the sports field. My father said to me, do you know that man? And I said, no. And he said, that's Con Brushing. And my heart sank when I saw him. I said, isn't he only an ordinary man? I thought he'd be up over the houses and everything. They had such talk about him. But I think it was wonderful. And there is a poem I have there now, if you can take this. In 1984, when they officially opened the sports field in my van. That's the Con Brushing Memorial Field, that whatever name they're putting it isn't memory Con Brushing anyhow. And they brought out a programme and they asked me to write something for it. And this is the verse I wrote to the memory of Con Brushing. When but a child I heard his name poured out from lips that spoke with pride, I relished every loud acclaim, my heart like theirs felt overjoyed. I placed him in the Fianna mould, through childish dreams the vision ran. I longed to see the green and gold, I longed and hoped to see this man. This man in later years I met, his manner harboured no disguise, his honest heart on goodness set, with modesty his greatest prize. And yet sufficient spirit reigned to stand for right, to raise to flame the bursting cheers that oft acclaimed his jewelled movement in the game. This game he loved and sporting played from antiquity's ancient store. The living spark official made and trained the Gael to love it more. The names with pride we still recall, the soul its source, the heart its shield. Through time and space we bless them all and make their monument this field. This field to which he calls in thrust, the Gaels to love and play the game. God keeps his soul, the grave his dust, we proudly give this field his name. And here, while summer breezes kiss the bending grass and steal away, we play the game in hours like this. We bless this man, this field, this day.
That's beautiful, Dan. Yeah. That's lovely. In memory of the legendary, the great Con Brasten. What a great footballer. Come here. Writing that and the opening of the field, that's another great thing in Kerry, is the association of great names and fields and dressing rooms being called after people. Yeah, yeah. Isn't it, Dan?
It is, really, yeah. I don't know what any place ever be called after me.
Today, then, now, today, are people like you and other people writing poems and verses and ballads about present-day footballers?
Well, I suppose there would be a few writing all the time.
But is it dying a bit?
I think it is dying a bit. Well, I remember in the past now, to tell you, if you like, a sad story. When I was young, I had an awful interest in poetry. I still have. I used to read out Byers, and I have wonderful poems in it. But PC used to write for the Kerry Man that time, and he used to have beautiful poems, and I kept all I could. And you know, even that I was young, I had sense not to fold the paper, and where they put him into a wardrobe, and they put him in the bottom of the wardrobe so that there was no need to have him folded. And they survived. I married. And one time my wife was sick, and a woman came here housekeeping. And one night I came home, and she had a news for me. I put new papers in the wardrobe. Fresh papers, I think, she said. Oh, yeah. I said, what do you do with the old ones? I burned them. Oh, gee. They were gone. I did not know whether you get him in the Kerry Man or not.
History burned.
Oh, history burned, but PC, he wrote some beautiful pieces. He was right about the bobbed hair and many things. And I thought they were great. There was one there, the 26th, we shall long remember, the sun's bright rays down the hilltops rolled, and shone in beauty where the teams did duty, the boys in blue and in green and gold. Two brilliant bands in that grand arena announced the coming of a struggle rare, while seas of faces fill the empty spaces, and for once old Ireland seemed free from care. I think that's a beautiful thought.
What do the parishes of Kerry and the areas around the different places football wise mean? For instance, now you have Con Brasten came from a small little area, now you have the likes of Eamon Breen and people like that have present day come from small little areas. What does it mean to the areas to have great footballers?
Well, it means a lot to the area, because it means they have someone to look forward to. And going through life ourselves, what are we, our aim in life? Our destined aim is to serve our soul. If there was no God, if there was no Calvary, we'd be looking into the darkness. We have a name, and that is our game. And someone asked me one time about being famous. And I said, the only way I wish to be famous is to serve my soul and day. That is all I want. And that is the greatest of all, the greatest achievement you'll ever get. And I often say, if you say your prayers at night, the greatest wish a man ever expresses, he mightn't realise it, he's expressing it every night. If he says the night offering, there's a beautiful line in it, may I breathe forth my soul in peace with thee. I think man could never wish for anything better than that.
Lovely, well said.
Yeah, and you have a lot of people that look forward to everything, like Ballymongford now, they have Johnny Welch, and they would look forward to him. And his achievements would make him a man they would listen to. You could say, like, what does that fella know? But there would be a great men, and they wouldn't have any great experience of playing football.
You had great admiration for a great Kerry footballer of the 50s, Paddy Sheehy, Lartimerson. Paddy died suddenly. He was an outstanding player in the 50s, but you had great admiration for him. You knew his dad well, John Joe, the legendary John Joe. A great GA family.
I know the legendary John Joe well, and I know to get away from football that often I wrote a recitation, Rita Danaher's Ginnet. And every time I met John Joe at any function, we worked for the same company, as I did insurance, and that's how I got to know him so well. I knew Niall, of course, very well. Niall maybe was a bigger rogue than Paddy, but Paddy was a very good footballer.
And Sean Ogg and Brian.
And Sean Ogg, they were all footballers, and I got to be personal friends with all of them. But I remember from Paddy day, going back to 53, I was sorry for Paddy. He was dropped to the final against Armagh. But he was on, I think it was Louth, they met in the semi-final. But there was a man marking Paddy, and I think that at the time there was hardly any forward in Ireland that could play him. But I was glad when Paddy came back again in 55 and 59. And of course there was an amount of sorrow when Paddy died. But I remember meeting a woman one day, and she said to me, "I heard you wrote a verse about Paddy Sheehy." And I said, "I did." And she said, "Could you say it for me?" And I said, "I will." And I said it. She made no remark. So I said, "What do you think of it?" "Tell you the plain truth, I don't understand the word of it." So it wasn't in her style, you see, but it was maybe for her, it was out of the ordinary. But anyhow, to give when you can express your own opinion then. In memory of Paddy Sheehy, when drifting clouds obscured the noon, and shaded eyes bear dreams to deeper thought, and yet behold the contrast all divine of sun and cloud by God's good graces wrought. And yet no cloud thy noon obscures, or dims our grief thy morning swell. By hallowed shade still bloom the flowers of that bright noon where no night fell. Shade it not with human woe, nor measure life by clay or tomb. 'Twas heaven beckoned, then repose in her sweet bowers in lasting bloom. Yet still the cherished lingering light full oft the scene's sublime acclaim, when dashing deeds and fragrant fields saw wild emotions rock to flame. And though by death they be subdued, and thy bright star forever set, in memory's green those golden hours live on in thrilling moments yet.
Live on in thrilling moments yet. And that's what Kerry football is all about, because the moments live on then, don't they?
The moments live on and the thrilling moments do. And in every match there is something that people can refer back to.
Dan, enjoy your song.
I'll enjoy my song, thank you.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Dan Keane is my special guest tonight. We're talking about football and his love for football, and talking about little bits and pieces of his life and generally, really. Dan, as we're talking about football, the most important symbol of football, of course, is the Sam Maguire Cup. Now, it has been coming to Kerry for many, many, many years. What does it mean when that cup comes across the border into the county and it travels and traverses the whole county from end to end, schools and everything?
Well, I think the young lads are always delighted to see the cup, if it was only to get a few hours break at school. But there seem to be an awful welcome wherever they go for the Sam Maguire Cup. And I suppose it is a token of a wonderful achievement for the year. But having said that, I suppose you can't forget the men who were the runners-up, because you wouldn't have an All-Ireland without two teams, and it wouldn't have... The quality of your win, I always say, is the quality of your opponent. And there was a man writing in the Kerryman one time, P.F. Foley. P.F. was right under, he was Paddy Foley. But he made a great statement in the Kerryman one year. Kerry won the tight game. And what he said was, "It is better to achieve success forged in the red heat of battle than a runaway victory over an outclassed opponent." And the tighter the game is, the better the win is. Even though you might have tension towards the end for the players and for the fans and everything. But Sam Maguire is a wonderful thing to bring around. As a matter of fact, I tried to paint a picture of Sam Maguire himself, and I gave the cup, we'll say we gave it an animation, we put a soul into it and where it could talk. I'm not too sure what All-Ireland I wrote this after, but I know I wrote it in this for Listowel, and there was a girl by the name of Rosaleen Collins, she sang it. And I was talking to a man after, he was a Yank, and he told me, "I met a man in Listowel," he said, "and he heard a girl singing her song." And he said to me, "Isn't Dan Keane a smart man?" I said, "What are we talking about? Dan Keane is a fool." And I said, "Maybe you're right." Well, he said, I went over to America, and you'd do anything you want to make you feel it. And I figured you'd have sold 1,000 copies of that night if you only sold them for a shilling each.
Yeah.
But no, I was never out to make money. I was out to express the feelings that were hidden in my soul. And I was out to express the feelings according to the nature that God instilled into me. And that's why I'd like to express things sweetly. I don't think that vulgarity and poetry have anything in common. I don't think anything could be styled as poetry if it has lines in it that I'd consider vulgar. But this is what I said about Sam Maguire. The name I bear is Sam Maguire. I'm Irish to the core. This dear old land from north to south I've travelled o'er and o'er. From east to west I've met the best, but still where'er I roam, I long to hear that Kerry cheer, for Kerry is my home. I love to see those Kerry hills, I love those hills of old. The little streams that laugh their way through glens of green and gold. The lovely lakes, the rugged rocks, the flash of ocean's foam. But oh, to hear that Kerry cheer, for Kerry is my home. How grand to see our Kerry boys dash dauntless in the fray. The goalie backs and centre field upon all Ireland day. Our fiery forwards flowing free as sweetly as a poem. And then to hear that Kerry cheer, for Kerry is my home. Yes, Kerry, I am back again to where I most belong, to hear your prayers, your gallant sons, in story and in song. Let wild delight and bonfires bright rise up the heaven's dome, then let me hear that Kerry cheer, for Kerry is my home.
And Kerry is the home of the Sam Maguire, isn't it?
Well, I suppose we say it is anyhow, yeah.
Dan, I want to mention two footballers here, and what does Mick O'Connell and Maurice Fitzgerald signify?
Oh, the two of them came from the one area. Maurice Fitzgerald's father worked with me with the same company, so that's how I got to be acquainted. But I remember I went down to Cashel Island to a man's funeral. Our sergeant rode on my van, and I went down to his father's funeral, and of course I couldn't come home without calling in to Maurice. He had the insurance office there. Well, not Maurice, but his father. And when I went in, I met
Ned.
A man. I don't know which of them I met. No, Ned wasn't there. Well, he was in a room. And I went in and I said to the man behind the counter, do you do insurance against colour graffitis? And he said, what? And I said, do you do insurance against colour graffitis? And he was looking at me. And the next thing I heard his father's voice in another room, that's Dan Keane.
Yeah.
And he came out and we had a chat. But I got to know Maurice. Maurice, a very nice friendly night. But he was a supreme artist. He was what I'd call a footballer. Now, as far as Michael O'Connor is concerned, I would say he's the greatest footballer I ever saw. He had the ability to field. He had a wonderful grace. He had a wonderful shape. He was real poetry. He had everything. He had purity of thought going into the game. And he expressed it in purity in the way he played. I thought that was wonderful. One of the best balls I ever saw, Cotton Croke Park, was a 68 final. Mickey O'Connell caught a ball in an angled dive. And he brought his legs over under him as if the ball was held to the sky and that he swung off of it. I thought it was a beautiful movement, and that lingered long. But I thought the best score I ever saw in Croke Park. Now, this is from an atmosphere. The television has no atmosphere like the All-Ireland Day. But I'd say it was in 1959, against Dublin. Mickey O'Connell got a ball. I'd imagine he was about 40 yards out from the Kerry goals. The cheer went up with him. And he started to solo, and the cheer was coming, as if the cheer was the music to which he was dancing. And he soloed for about another 40 yards. And the music of the cheer kept with him. And then he kicked the ball in a beautiful shot, and it sailed over the bar. And the cheer went up into a crescendo, as if you looked up and saw the soul of your mother going into heaven. I thought that was the way, and that was a thing that will forever live in my mind. As regards individual performances, in 1946, in the drawn game against Roscommon, I thought Gus Cremins cut the ball as high as I ever saw cut in Croke Park. But the sad thing about it, he was fouled when he came down, and I couldn't see what he'd have done if he wasn't fouled. It resulted in a free. But talking about that, there are things the writers miss in a game, and I don't know as to that they don't think they're worth mentioning. But in that game, the drawn game with Roscommon in 46, the only Kerry player who outplayed his man for the whole hour was Jackie Lyon. And in the second half, Onesie Hoare was playing in desperation, for he couldn't play Jackie Lyon. And Paddy Kennedy got a ball. I'm not sure did he kick it with the right leg or the left leg, but he sent it in like a rainbow. And Onesie Hoare dashed out. He took a fly kick at the ball and sent it back out. Paddy Kennedy caught it. He spun around and kicked it with the other leg. And that went in, and Burke caught it. And two backs rushed him. And they rushed him a kind of, you know, without any calculation. And he slipped and put it into the net. So that was the one ball that Onesie Hoare beat Jackie Lyon, and it finished in the net. The ball came in again, and Onesie Hoare got in front of Jackie Lyon, and it was a ground ball, and he pulled in it and drove it over the line. Teddy Connor took the free, the sideline ball, and he drove it into the centre of the field to Geiger. And Geiger put it over in back to the goals, and it finished in the net. And I said, it was hard looking on Onesie Hoare. Right. He beat Jackie Lyon for two balls, and the two of them finished in the net. And then it a draw.
Then we spoke earlier on, and I asked you a question about, was there any ballads being written about players of today? But I know that there are. I know that you have written a ballad. And this year in the Munster Championship, in the Munster Final, Dara O'Shea, when he runs out onto the field in Fitzgerald Stadium, he has become the most capped Kerry footballer in championship game of all time. Yeah. He'd have played more championship games than any footballer in the history of Kerry.
Yeah.
Now, I do know that you have a special regard for him, and that you wrote a lovely ballad, which I heard the lovely Peggy Sweeney singing at one particular time. Now, you wrote a ballad about Dara O'Shea, didn't you?
I wrote a ballad about Dara O'Shea when he was injured and couldn't come on. And it was more or less, it had a dual purpose. It was to encourage the Kerry team not to let him down in his absence. Because it's like a woman going to Listowel and leaving the youngsters to mind the house, and she said he couldn't keep it right while I was out. And that was really the reason. But the whole thing, but of course the point is, I won't sing it, because I know Peggy is a good singer. Everybody thinks she is. And if I sang it, they might realise that she isn't as good as she thinks.
But you're going to recite for us.
It's recited.
Right then.
Yeah. Now, rise o'er the gloom, brave Kerry hearts, we've lost our great O'Shea. Though tongue and pen shall sing his prayers, we'll miss him in the fray. Our gallant team in gold and green shall ever soothe our sorrow. So raise it high, our battle cry, brave hearts, remember Dara. He'll sadly miss that final hour he strove so hard to reach. But battling brothers, one and all, our hidden power shall preach. Rise, rise above the grief that falls, the human heart to harrow. So raise it high, our battle cry, brave hearts, remember Dara. Our goalie tall shall feel the ball, our back shall battle brave. Our centre pair in courage rare shall rule the rising wave. Our forward power to many an hour, the kingdom's soothing arrow, shooting arrow, shall love to hear the battle cheer, brave hearts, remember Dara. The mighty men of Mayo in honour high we hold, but Kerry hearts can never ne'er forsake the kingdom's green and gold. For fan and friend in vocal fair, no foreign fray shall borrow, but loud and clear in rousing cheer, brave hearts, remember Dara. Now Seamus strives to make it back, he'll be an awesome ally, a father figure in the field to rouse, to raid, to rally. So boys, your best is our request, then utter Sam McHara, we'll welcome here for one more year. You're welcome here for one more year, brave hearts, remember Dara. I made a few to sleeps, but I hadn't read it for a long time.
Well said. Dan, your final piece of music?
My final piece of music, I suppose, anything in the name of, what do you call him, Sean O'Reilly. And to sung one on the head and sung by Sean O'Shea. And I liked Sean O'Shea and I loved anything and everything by Sean O'Reed.
And you're very welcome back to the final part of our programme. Dan Keane is my very special guest. Dan, somebody told me that you have a great love for Mayo. How is that?
I really have an awful deep love for Mayo. Because I'll tell you now, I went to England one time. My sister was going to Australia and she was staying with a Mayo girl. And when she came back in holidays, that Mayo girl had come up home. And we went up to Mayo for a holiday. And we stayed there. She was Nora McHale. No, she was Nora. Her mother was Mary McHale. She was Nora Calvia. And she stayed with her brother Patrick. They were on the road out to Mulranny, but I can't remember the townland. But they told me the house in which they lived was previously the house where the Haughies lived before they moved into Castlebar. And there was the weighing scales and the weights were still in the house. That was one reason I loved Mayo. I loved it for many other reasons because I went up there a few more times on holidays and I thought it was a wonderful county and I thought that people were so friendly. And I remember one time I was going up and that was before I got my hip replacement and I wasn't able to walk around much. But a great friend of mine, they were musicians and I rang him and I asked him, could he get digs for me close to Ballinahan the town, but it will have to be downstairs. And he got me in a place where I had great protection with a guard and his wife. And I stayed in that house, but was there. But that's why I love Mayo. I know the first time I saw Mayo playing football was in 1936. They beat Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. And the following week's Kerry man, there was a letter from Robbie Steck. And he said Kerry were beaten by Mayo while the best midfielder in Kerry, and I would venture to say in Ireland, was walking the streets of Ballybunnan, and that was Johnny Welch. Yeah. But there was one thing I loved in Mayo, the musical sound of their cheer. And I thought that there was music in it. Now, there was another reason I loved it too. There was a man living in Knockanure by the name of Mick Barry. He was a good singer. And he used to sing the True-Hearted Men from the County Mayo. So I'd heard of it very early in the time. And that was one of the reasons. And I suppose you develop other reasons. But I love Donegal also. Because I went up after with my other sister from Australia to Donegal. She knew people from Donegal in Australia. And we went up there. And we found they were also. And I was up there at a wedding. And I went up to Moncrana to Flacule. And you know, Jerry Keane. He said to me, how are digs got? And I said, no. He said, we'll never get digs now. No hope. And I went up, I met him on Sunday, and I said, Jerry, I thought you said I wouldn't get digs. And he said, well, you left it very late. And I said, I'll tell you something. I got free digs last night. They wouldn't take money. And I got an invitation to free digs when the flag be in Bunclan again. Yeah. And that was true, like, because that was good. I was up there at a wedding, and I met people, and I got to be friendly with them. A woman from Creaslook, I asked her, is that the place that Percy Finch wrote about? And she said, it is. I said, is it a nice place? Come up for a week, she said, and we'll keep one up and see it.
And you have something special to read for us, Dan?
Something special now about Mayo. Well, I heard Mayo playing after against Kerry in a semi-final. And they were not good. Kerry won easy. But what disappointed me was their fans. And the beautiful sound with the richness and the fullness of Come On Mayo, it was gone. And they were inside clapping, eh, my way, oh, Mayo. Oh, I'm dealing. Yeah, yeah. I said, they're gone bad, no wonder they can't win. Yeah, yeah. And if they could go back to that. Well, then later, in the Irish Independent, I read a piece by Cliona Foley. And she gave a description of two girls, the McGing sisters, that were playing with Mayo. And they had another sister who was only 18 years, and she also had played with Mayo previous. And she got killed in a car accident. And they were trying to make up their minds. Now, would they play or would they not? And they figured out if they didn't play, they'd be letting down the whole team. And they decided to play. But that mother covered the issue. She put a photo of their dead sister into their socks. And they took that photo along with them through the match. And I thought it was a beautiful idea.
It was lovely then, yeah.
But I wrote this verse. Aisling was the girl's name. So silent, sweet Aisling, no word for to cheer us. Too soon came the signal to call you away. Your picture we bore as we felt you were near us, to strengthen our hearts for the depth of the fray. 'Twas lonely to march in the pre-march parade, though the light of our hope was aglow. We thought of your life, of the games that you played, and your love for our native Mayo. The struggle was stern, we played as a team. The last ounce of our vigour was given. We were but two of a gallant 15, with our thoughts between Mayo and heaven. The contest was over, the cup was retained. Our captain acclaimed to cheers. In gladness and grief, how could we be blamed for shedding the soul-soothing tears? So silent, sweet Aisling, you're in your home up above, but you and our hearts we're still keeping. Our trophies we'll bring as a token of love to the grave where we're peacefully sleeping.
That's beautiful, Dan.
I wrote that verse, and they said she played with a certain team in Mayo, and I checked the directory and I found there was a barrack there. And I rang the barrack and I had their address. And they said, we haven't got her address, but we know she plays with that team. But if you write to the secretary of the club, won't he direct it? And that's what I did.
Yeah. You wrote to the secretary, yeah?
I wrote to the secretary.
Yeah.
And they delivered it to her, and her mother wrote back to me. And it was only a few months ago, she sent me on the notary card of the dead girl.
Oh, lovely, then. That was beautiful. Yeah. So, once again, the connection between football and dates and people all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
And how it unites people, both in life and death, then.
In life and death, all these things are naturally interwoven, and they're all making a part of the complete picture.
What disappoints you about Gaelic football?
Well, what disappoints me a lot is a word that I see used a lot. If Kerry played Mayo and beat him, and if Mayo played Kerry and beat Kerry, they'd come out with the word sweet revenge. I don't think the word revenge should come into sport. And there's another word coming into the Kerry, into the football today, that I never before heard. Running at the backs. That was never there in my youth. Football was a different game in that time. The high field and the long kick and the fine open play. That was the wonderful play, and that was the game that sank into our hearts. And no matter how old we'll get, we'll keep to what we learned in our youth.
Are you disappointed with the style of football that's been played today in the line of the swarming type?
I'm telling you, the game is faster. No, as far as I can see, they're running faster. But is the ball travelling faster? That's what makes the game fast. That's why so hurling is such a fast game, because of the distance you can get into a puck with a slither. But I'll give you one instance. In 1955 All-Ireland, I saw five Dublin players passing a ball, and they brought it about 40 yards. And eventually, John Cronin intercepted a pass, and in one kick he drove it down over 60 yards. So that's why I couldn't figure out how to say the game is faster. They're running faster, and they have to be fitter. And today, what we're looking for is not footballers, it's athletes.
I must mention one more man to you before we finish up. Mick O'Dwyer celebrated his 70th birthday lately, and he's still on the sidelines in Croke Park. Unique individual. What does he mean to Kerry and the game of Gaelic football?
He means a lot, no doubt. He has given his life to football. And Mick O'Dwyer was a personal friend of mine, because I can tell you a story about him. Mick O'Dwyer was here in this house, and I'll tell you how he happened to come. You remember Ned Fitzgerald Morris's father I mentioned? We went to Dublin to an insurance conference, and it appeared that some man crashed a car back in Kerry when he was touring. And he went to Mick O'Dwyer to put the car in a way he could travel home. But then he bought a new car from Mick. And he was treading in the old one, and it was in Dublin. And Ned Fitz asked me, would I drive the car down to here? And Mick O'Dwyer came out after and collected it. And that's how I got to know Mick O'Dwyer. And he came after to open the carnival in my van. And I remember that I was talking about Micah Dwyer, and there was one beautiful thing where his name was on the lips of many. And where did I put it? His name was even on the lips of lovers as they alighted under a moray moon.
Lovely, well said.
Yeah.
Well said. Come here, what are your views on referees?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked me that, because as a friend of mine up there, my son Paddy, I never saw him listening in a match, but he has the name of being a good referee. But there's a man they're knocking out, Tom Flavin. He is related to me, actually, but I can find players in him. But there was one thing I noticed about him. He seemed to have the ability to get the players at their ease. I remember one time there was a match in my van, and that was during the tournament we had for the carnival. And I heard him saying, "I need a bit of frightened. I'm in charge here, and I'll tolerate nothing, and I don't think it is..." But I looked at it different. Do you ever hear the poem Barbara Fritchie? I unite all my actions and thinkings around poetry. Barbara Fritchie, there was a line in it, "A nobler nature within him stirred at that old woman's deed and word." And I think that a man who has the ability to arouse the nobler nature within the people is a better referee than the man who's now threatening. And I think the yellow cards of the spy at the daisies, it reminds me of the day they have for the cancer for not selling the daffodils. And it's like a daffodil day now going around, yeah.
Dan, what's your favourite GA memory?
My favourite GA memory, well, now would there be anyone? Well, I suppose the favourite GA memory would be the 46 All-Ireland when Kerry were 6 points down, and I saw men who were staunch Kerry supporters tearing their caps. And I told them they should be ashamed and never again cheer for Kerry, because they were only cheering when they were winning. But you must love a man when he's not winning as well as you love him when he's winning.
What's your greatest disappointment?
Oh, well, I suppose my greatest disappointment was when I saw Conn Brushton in first and found out he was only an ordinary man. But that is a great memory. But I'll tell you that one thing now about journalists. We mentioned Micah O'Connell. I saw a report in the paper one time, and you know what it said? Micah O'Connell's effort was wide. Well, I thought it was the worst description I ever saw of a powerful, intelligent move, because they were playing Dublin.
How would you have described it?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you the facts and let them describe themselves. The ball was coming down to Micah Dwyer's area, and Micah Dwyer was beating the man he was marking. But a second Dublin man was coming out, much like the present Tyrone. Second man was coming out to tackle Micah O'Connell, But Micah O'Connell read the situation in a flash, and he went right across and went clear over the three other men. And he hit the ball, and I'd say he was 80 yards out, and it sailed wide. But I thought it was a very poor description, because what he achieved was wonderful.
Then finally, the final question, Joe. Are we in Kerry inclined to forget our traditions? Are we inclined to dwell too much on the present, which is all made up about money and sponsorship and everything? Are we in Kerry forgetting our tradition?
Well, we are forgetting our tradition in a way, because all the papers and all the journalists give out the glory of winning in All-Ireland. But that football game was never sanctioned for 15 men to win an All-Ireland medal. It was made for the ordinary countryman to go out after his day's work and have a recreation that was enjoyable and was harmless to anybody. That was why football was made.
Dan Keane, it was lovely talking to you.
Thank you very much. But you know what? If you give another fortnight, I might give you a good
Listen, we'll be back to you. Thanks, Dan.
Right.